You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mades.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Locked On Nuggets, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mades from DenverStiffs.com, the world's largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, including at Locked On Nuggets. And you want to do that because by the time you're listening to this, it'll be Draft Wednesday. Draft Wednesday is where I challenge all of my listeners and followers to a game of daily fantasy basketball. So tomorrow, we're going to do that. I'll send out the link on Twitter. What you're going to want to do is download the Draft app. It's free to download. You sign up for an account and you use the promo code LONuggets, L-O like locked on, LONuggets, and then you follow me, LONuggs. That's my username. Search for me, follow me, and then you'll get a notification when I lay down the gauntlet and challenge everybody to see if you can beat me in a Wednesday daily fantasy draft. It's a lot of fun, man. It's been growing every week. I think we did 8 people in last Wednesdays, and it was a lot of fun. So do it, and if you win, I'll give you a shout-out on this show. This episode of the show, one of my favorites to do, the 10-10, where I catch up with the Nuggets over the last 10 games of the season, and I kind of just look at them from a statistical standpoint and also just kind of analyze where they're at. I think it's a really good way of taking the temperature of the team and just seeing how things have been going over the last 10 games. It's also, weirdly, makes time fly by. I can't believe I'm doing this for the third time. We're talking about games 20 through 30. I feel like the NBA season just began. I feel like I just did this episode like a week ago. It's actually been 3 weeks, but you know, it's crazy how quickly the season kind of flies by when you break it into 10-game chunks. But I also think it's useful. You notice some trends. This 10-game stretch, I think, for the Nuggets is defined by the injuries to Paul Millsap and Nikola Jokic. The injury to Millsap happened prior. It happened, on the 19th of November. And I'm covering games from November 30th and on. So by this point, the Nuggets had already lost Paul Millsap, and actually, had they lost Nikola Jokic yet? When did he go down? What game was that? That was the Chicago game. So actually, it started with Jokic played in that game on the 30th, which was the Chicago game, but only partially before going down. So I think this stretch of the season is defined by being shorthanded and you know, all the stuff that happened in the absence of the team's two best players, Nikola Jokic and Paul Millsap. Going into this, I got to be honest, going into this stretch, when Jokic went down, I thought two things. One, the Nuggets are in trouble. And two, I thought, you know, the Nuggets, I think, are going to be a little bit less interesting. You know, a lot of us, myself included, you know, we get caught up in the Jokic hype, and he's so fun, he's so unique, and all of these things. And it's almost like, ah, man, now we're not going to get to see that. I got to say, I don't feel that way anymore. I think if there's one positive from a fan standpoint from this last 10-game stretch, for me personally, was I really started to enjoy Jamal Murray and Gary Harris, in particular those two guys, but also you could say Trey Lyles, Mason Plumlee. It's like you got to appreciate those guys more, and you got to kind of get to know their games, and I feel like their games kind of flourished a little bit more in the absence of Nikola Jokic, and that's why I think it's kind of excited. This next 10 games, hopefully, knock on wood, you never really know what they'll be about, but I think they'll be about integrating Jokic into the lineup. But this last 10-game stretch defined, I think, by guys stepping up and kind of coming into their own. And that's kind of be a running theme for this stretch of games. So the Nuggets went 5-5 over the last 10 games with wins over Chicago, the Lakers, Orlando, Detroit, and New Orleans. Losses to Dallas, New Orleans, Indiana, Boston, and OKC. So 5-5, not a great stretch, not a bad stretch, given all of the adversity that they faced. But let's get right into it. We're going to start with Gary Harris. I'm going to start with the 2, go to the 3, 4, 5, and then finish with the 1s. Gary Harris over the last 10 games. All these stats I point out are going to be last 10 games unless I specifically say otherwise. 19.4 points per game, 4.6 assists, 30% from the 3-point line, pretty down quite a bit. His shot's been off. And then a plus 5 per game. That's not a net rating. That's a per game he's averaging when he's on the court. Nuggets are plus 5. He led the team in scoring over the stretch. And I guess, is that a surprise? I don't know. I think it's a little bit of a surprise. Gary Harris, you know, I just don't think of him as like a high volume scorer. It's kind of funny. He had a career high 36 points. during the stretch. And it was funny, that was his first 30-point game. It seems like he's had more big scoring games, but prior to that, only scored 28, I think, one time, 26 one time. So I don't think of him as this big volume scorer, yet he averaged for 10 games 19.4 points per game. I think that's really impressive. I mentioned the 36-point game. That was a career night for him. He just really stepped up as a playmaker. And I think, as I mentioned, Jamal Murray, Mason Plumlee, Gary Harris, Jamal Murray, those guys are the guys that I think benefited the most from this last 10-game stretch and who have really emerged. And Gary Harris, I think, emerged as a guy that could put the ball on the floor and make something out of nothing, whereas before he showed flashes of that, like little bits of it, but you would never say that that's who he is. That's who a creator out of nothing is, who Gary Harris has been over the last 10 games. The shooting, he has been in a shooting slump though, 30% on 3-point field goal shots. Obviously a little bit lower than you would expect for Gary Harris, actually 29.9, and that's on 6.7 attempts a game. That's a team high 6.7 attempts. So you just imagine if he was shooting his regular 40% from three, those numbers would be even more gaudy and more absurd. So I think so he's showing a signs of going to another level. I think the thing that I'm keeping my eye on for Gary Harris now is, now that he's kind of stepped out of the lines, or kind of expanded the lines of what his game is, the question is going to be, can he maintain the efficiency? And obviously, I think some of his shots will be reduced now that Jokic is back in the lineup and some of the other guys are ready to step up, but only slightly. And now the question will be, can he mix in creating with staying within himself? And that'll be kind of interesting to see. And then obviously his 3-point shot, I'm curious to see where that goes. I would be shocked if it didn't go back up here pretty quickly. And playing with Nikola Jokic will be interesting. Playing with Gary, with Plumlee. Plumlee specifically mentioned at practice today the chemistry that he's kind of developed with Gary Harris. So that's kind of neat to see. And but he's played a lot of minutes with Mason Plumlee. Now he's going to get back to Jokic. I'm curious to see over this next 10 games if that Jokic-Harris connection from last year that was just so good, if they can get that back. Because I felt like it's been a fraction of what it was last year. We haven't seen a lot of those cuts, backdoor cuts and stuff. Felt like we were getting one or two of those a game, those curl cuts, one or two a game. Haven't really seen a lot of those. I'm curious to see if the Nuggets kind of get rolling there again. Will Barton, 17.8 points per game, 5.6 assists, leads the team in assists. So it's funny, Gary Harris leads the team in points, Barton leads the team in assists, up is down, blue is green. It's crazy, but Barton, I think, has had his 10-game stretch can be characterized, I think, by a few really, really great games and a few really, really bad ones. It's kind of been some peaks and valleys there. 37-point game. So Gary Harris had the 36-point game. Barton won up some with a 37-point game, career high for him. He also had a 10-assist game in which he only took five shots. He's kind of become the de facto point guard. And part of this is that Moutier got hurt and missed a game, a couple games. Now, but part of this, I think, is just by necessity. The Nuggets have kind of put the ball in his hands. His 10-assist game came with Moutier healthy. But he's kind of been taking on those point guard roles. And it's interesting because the 37-point game was awesome. The 10-assist game, I think, was the better game for me. And the reason was Will Barton, even in that OKC game where he was really bad, he had some great passes in that game. He had some great playmaking plays in that game. And I just think his playmaking is an underappreciated part of his game when he's really on. His scoring, he's obviously known as a scorer, but I think he does a good job with that point guard spot when he's looking to facilitate. And it's tough for him because some nights you need 37 points from him. Some nights you need 10 assists. In that OKC game, I thought they needed the assists more than the scoring. And he was, you know, going 3 of 15 or whatever it was. You know, I think if he would have gone 3 for 11 and maybe just been like, okay, my shot's not there tonight, let's see what else is there, I think it would have been good for the team. And that's kind of, I think, for him, the story is going to be, can he find the balance between playmaking and scoring? That's going to be the key for him. And admittedly, it's a really tough job for him because it's going to be a game-by-game basis. What does the team need from me? They need him to be aggressive. So it's not like he can afford just to come out and be like, okay, I'm a facilitator tonight, or I'm going to be a facilitator. He has to constantly put the defense on his heels, but he's going to have to be a good decision maker. And I just think he has, I would say maybe he has the toughest job on the team right now, in terms of the Nuggets just need so many different things from him on any given night. So fortunately, I think if anybody's up to the task, the Thrill is. He's a very confident individual, and so it'll be interesting to kind of see him continue doing that. Also interesting will be that second unit. I think the second unit as a whole is going to be interesting, because what do the Nuggets do now? Who's the starter? And then I'm going to talk about this a little bit later, but who's the point guard with that second unit? What are some of the lineup combinations Malone goes? Do they play small for 48 minutes? It's going to be interesting, and I think Barton is affected, both affected by those decisions and will affect those decisions. Malik Beasley, 8 games. So 8 out of 10 games. He actually played in all 8 of the last 8 games, which has been cool to see. This is like our first really, you know, it's been a good opportunity to get a peek at Beasley and see what he's got. 16.6 minutes per game. 31% from the three-point line, you know, a little bit lower than I think he's capable of. 104.2 defensive rating is third best on the team. And I actually think the story of him has been his defense. I think he's a guy that just plays so hard. I know he knows 16 minutes a game, he shouldn't get tired out there, because he's not playing more than like 6-7 minutes at a time, 8 minutes maybe at a time. So, and then he gets a long rest. So he's got the energy. He's young. And I think he's using that energy really well. An interesting play in that last OKC game. He drives to the basket fourth quarter and goes down. Could have been a foul, you know, maybe not. Refs say play on. Well, if you watch that play, he hits the ground and he pops up so quickly. Like you know, a lot of guys in that situation, they get knocked to the ground. They don't get the call. They look at the ref. They huff and puff and then they jog back on defense slowly. Man, he knows his role in this team. He can't afford to do those things. So he goes down, doesn't get the call, gets right back up, sprints back on defense, and that's what you get out of Malik Beasley. I think he makes some mistakes from time to time, although fewer mistakes this year than last year, and even fewer mistakes, I think, than the summer league, where maybe the burden, you know, he was playing out of role, so to speak. But I just think the energy and effort level from him has been really, really great. He's been a net positive in 6 of the 8 games he's played. And I think that speaks volume, especially considering, you know, the bench has not been a positive for most of this season. So the fact that he's coming off the bench and being a +6 in eight of the games, really, really impressive on his part. I'm excited for Malik Beasley. I'm going to talk about my ideal rotation at the end of the show. And I believe he's a part of it. Let me scroll down here. He's a guy that I think he's probably going to be the fewest minutes per game guy of my ideal rotation, but I still think he has a role on this team, and just his ability to knock down shots. I know he's only 31% from the three-point line, but I think that he can space the floor. So now it's the question of what will it take for him to be in the rotation and what happens from here. Wilson Chandler, 11.4 points per game, 35.3% from the three-point line. That's pretty good. For Wilson, that's a pretty good number, 35. I think you call that par for the course. You take it. Only 38.6% from field goal. That's the second lowest on the team, second only to Moutier. Moutier is the lowest. But 38%, it's interesting. He shoots almost the same from three as he does from two. And I think that's a concern. A lot of his kind of mid-range one-on-one game just hasn't been going down. Now, he had a really good stretch of games on that road trip. If you break it down, in the middle of that road trip, I think after the New Orleans game, so from when the Nuggets really had some good road games, Orlando, Detroit, Indy, Boston, he had a really good stretch in there. Shot the ball well, was aggressive. I think Wilson has been much more aggressive over this last 10-game stretch than any point before, and part of that's by necessity. The Nuggets, like, you take out Millsap, you take out Jokic, you're taking out 20 points, or let's see, 35 points a game, so somebody has to step up, and I think he kind of knows that. But I think the bigger factor for Wilson Chandler has been he's playing a lot of power forward, and I think that's a good thing for him. I think it's a good thing for the team. I think Wilson is a very useful player at the power forward position, and maybe he's much more of an up-and-down player at the small forward position. Defensively, I think he's been pretty consistent all year as a consistent plus defender, but offensively, I just think he's so much more comfortable as a power forward. And another question about the rotation is how much small ball are they going to play? I think that's the answer is already clear. Until Millsap gets back, it's going to be almost exclusively small ball. I don't think there's a place for Fareed on this roster anymore. which is actually a good thing, to be honest with you. You know, I've talked about how I'm a Fareed fan, but with the way the roster is constructed, I think it, if you can get, if you don't need him, don't play him. And the Nuggets don't need him right now. I think they have better combinations out there that are working, and that just makes it all the more easy to maybe move on from Fareed here at the trade deadline if the Nuggets can find somebody to take him on. But that's Wilson. Three-point shot doing okay. Two-point shot not doing so great, but very curious to see where he goes from here. And curious to see how the Malone uses his rotation with him, because he's a big question mark there too. You could tell Malone loves Torrey Craig. I think Wilson playing at the four is smart, and Jokic going right in there. I think I'm curious to see what that unit can do. Torrey Craig, only two games. I think I'm including him in the 10 because I think he's one of the 10 most important players of the last 10 games. I talked about Torrey Craig a lot in the last episode. I hope you guys listened to it. I didn't check the numbers, but every time there's a loss, people don't tune in for whatever reason. There's always good stuff. It's not like I sit there and lament the loss. There's a lot of good notes on that one, and I talked about Torrey Craig for a good 10 minutes, so this will be an abbreviated version of that, but I highly encourage you, if you're interested in Torrey Craig, go back and listen to it. Two games, 10 points per game, 4-for-7 from the three-point line. One steal, one block per game. 18 minutes in his first game, 30 in the second game. Started both. Malone's funny. Malone loves this dude. I mean, absolutely loves him. You could tell, you know, Malone, I don't think, would ever admit this. Maybe doesn't really feel this way, but if you ask him to rank the players, almost like ranking your children, rank your players, Torrey Craig's got to be up in those, like, his two, three, or four favorite players on the team. Because, and he's kind of said as much in that he gravitates. Today he had a quote saying he gravitates to defensive-minded players and guys that like to play defense, and Torrey Craig is that guy. He's a really good defender. He has the best defensive rating on the team. Again, two-game sample size, all of these things we have to take with a grain of salt, but 103.4 is the single best defensive rating on the team, and that's in a 48-minute sample size. So, and he had a cool quote today at Nuggets practice that I actually don't have the recording for, but it had something to do with the effect of, you know, half of, you're talking about defense and, you know, what are you trying to do, this or that, the scheme and this or that. And he was talking about, yeah, you know, the scheme, all that stuff I know, but he said most of defense is, or a big part of defense is what happens after you get beat, like after the defense breaks down. And I thought that was such an interesting comment because, you know, you run a scheme and, oh, guy blows by me, that's one thing. But Torrey Craig's a guy that just keeps playing. Like, he doesn't give up on plays. If you even think about that Westbrook play at the end where he got the foul, Torrey Craig gets blown by. He gets beat. And then it should have been, like, for almost anybody else, I think that play is completely over. But Torrey Craig rotates and he gets a tip, you know, he almost gets a hand on the ball. There was a couple plays like that in that OKC game where you freeze frame, you're like, okay, Torrey Craig got beat. And then you play it out and you're like, oh my gosh, he recovered and got a finger on the ball and it affected the play. And the Nuggets end up with a steal or with a transition opportunity. So I thought that was a really cool quote coming from him because it's something that I think everybody notices when you see him. It's defense is not all about being technically perfect. I think offense is a lot more about being technically perfect, but defense, it's a lot, it's half being technically perfect and the timing and the reads and all this and that, and half of it's just going out there and playing hard and, like, not quitting on plays and running through the tape, so to speak. And he does that as well as anybody on the, actually better than anybody on the team, and he's a joy to watch. He really is. He had another interesting quote today talking about how, you know, somebody asked him about how he became, you know, a great defensive player in his history. And he said, you know, actually in college, my first 2 years, I wasn't a very good defensive player at all. I was a scorer and I didn't put much effort into defense. I was a scoring guy and I just took defense like everyone else does. And he said he started talking to NBA scouts or pro scouts and just having them analyze his game. I'm guessing this is a big thing that happens to a lot of big time players. And he said that all the scouts came to him and said, your ticket to pro basketball is on the defense. Now, you're a good offensive player, but your type of guy that we're looking for is a defensive guy. And I think a lot of players hear this. You know, scouts tell people what they don't want to hear. A guy, oh, I'm a point guard and I'm a score first point guard and that's who I am. They're like, actually, you know, you're an off-ball guy, whatever, you know. And guys don't like to hear that, you know. I think it was interesting. Torrey Craig said he took that advice, or he said he heard it, and he goes, all right, I'm going to focus on my defense. And his next 2 years of college, he becomes a defensive player. He goes to Australia. He's a defensive player. And now here he is in the NBA, at the NBA level, because he said, all right, I'm a scorer, but I'll be a defensive player too, and that's where I'll make my bread and butter. That's my ticket. Here he is in the NBA, and I just think that's a really cool story. And more than anything, Malone trusts him, absolutely trusts him. So next 10 games, this next stretch will be, is Torrey Craig around? Is he starting? What's his minutes like? How's he playing? That's a huge question, and I'm very excited to find out the answer. Trey Lyles, 13.6 points, 6.3 rebounds, 56.4% from the three-point line. Let me say that again. 56.4% from the three-point line. That's insane. 4 three-pointers a game, so it's like on high volume. 26 minutes per game is fifth highest, so he's playing starters minutes. Even though he's coming off the bench, he's playing starters minutes. Half of his attempts are three-pointers, or almost half. I think like 4 of his 9 shots per game are three-pointers. That's pretty high volume. The coolest thing about his shot selection, 29% of his shots come from 0 to 3 feet. 21% come from 3 to 8 feet, I believe. Let me see this here. And then almost none of his shots, 5% come from the mid-range, and then 43% come from the 3-point line. So what that means is, to simplify this, he's either getting to the rim or he's taking a 3-pointer. And that's part of the reason he draws a comparison to Gallo is his height and his length, and then also because he really is a Maury Ball type player. He likes to take that three, and if you close out on him, he just goes all the way to the rim. He doesn't stop till he gets there, and it's been cool. He's one of the main stories. I'm sure for some people, he's the main story of the last 10 games. Donovan Mitchell, who? We don't know. We got Trey Lyles. We're happy, and it's cool. You know, I've heard rumbling. I think Tim Connelly's even said this on a radio show, that he really liked Trey Lyles back in 2014 in the draft, and he really wanted him then, and it didn't work out, and now they get him now. And I think you see Tim Connelly, first of all, batting like 90% in draft picks, so when he says something like that, I think everybody kind of, their ears perk up. But I think we're starting to see it. This guy's a player, and we see how much of a fit matters, because in Utah they went a different direction, but here in Denver he's making the most of an opportunity. And what kind of three-point shooter is he? I have no idea. I really don't have a read on this. I'll be honest. One of the cool things about him is he only had 2 games where he shot 50% or worse from the three-point line. So in 8 of the 10 games, he shot 50% or better. New Orleans and Dallas, the 2 worst games for the Nuggets by far, I mean, where they just got smoked on the road, he went 1-for-7. So think about this. He's shooting 56% from a three-point line, and in 2 games he went 1-for-7. He's really shooting like 65% in the other games. It's insane. I think his shooting, I don't think he's going to shoot 56% for the rest of the year, but I do think his shooting is somewhat sustainable, just because the way the Nuggets offense is working, it's just like Gallo. Teams have to pick their poison, and I think the Nuggets have found a couple plays and a couple things that they can do to get him as like the option that teams concede. And if he's going to shoot 40% or above from three-point line, let him concede that all day. He's absolutely killing it, and he looks really good. Defensive will be the thing to kind of keep an eye on with him. I think he's shown moments of being a very, very good defender. The other thing will be just where his minutes come now that the roster and rotation get a little bit full. But I think he's played so well over this stretch that it's no longer a question of if he'll play. Like, he is in the rotation. It's not like Malik Beasley, for example, is a guy that, if he didn't get into tomorrow night's game, Wednesday night's game, I wouldn't be surprised. If Trey Lyles didn't get into the game, I'd be shocked. It's like impossible at this moment. He is in the rotation. It's kind of cool to see. I'm a Trey Lyles fan. I'm on the bandwagon. Mason Plumlee, another breakout candidate, 62.7% field goal percentage. The guy is not just scoring. He's finishing his plays. He's finishing his roles. He's going up strong. And that's a big thing for him, because I think he's a guy that the Nuggets need that. He's not a great outside shooter. He's not great, with his floater or whatever. But when he goes up strong, he's had a couple dominant post moves where he's, faked up and under. But instead of like going up with finesse, he goes up and power dunks it. And that's been cool to see. Plus 5.1 per game, raw, not net, just averaging to be a 5.1 positive, is the second best on the team. 104 defensive rating is second best on the team. A 113.6 offensive rating is third best. So not just the raw plus minus, but the per 100 numbers, he's looking great on both sides of the ball. I think the only player that you could say in the top three in the on both categories. So he's just had a really, really, really good stretch of basketball here. And some huge defensive plays, too. You know, I don't think he's like an elite defensive player by any means, but the guy works really, really, really hard, and I think he wears guys down. This is why I think he could be a good, you know, it's going to be interesting to see as his minutes get reduced how he handles that, but he's a guy that I think can be a guy that wears people out, especially at home games with that second unit, because he is just so physical. He is so tiring to play against. And he's just been one of the best players on the team over the last 10 games. I don't think there's any question about that. I know some people, some Nuggets fans, haven't been huge Plumlee fans for whatever reason, but I think you look at the last 10-game sample size and you really see where his value is. And so now the big question becomes, and this is a huge question, one of the biggest questions perhaps of the next 2 months, how is he going to play now that Nikola Jokic is back? Now that his minutes are about to get reduced, now that he's going to probably be much less consistent and going to be playing spotty minutes, how is he going to do? I asked him that question today, and here's what he had to say.
So you're playing a lot of minutes when Jokic is out of the lineup. Now he's back, you're still starting. But what is the challenge now with him back in the lineup for you personally?
I would just say, you know, still being playing at a high level in a shorter rotation, if that is, or if they play us together, who knows. But, you know, our team, we've dealt with injuries. We've had guys in and out. So we really have to be like a no-excuse team where you just play whatever role you're given and do it to the best you can.
What would you say, what can the team do to best utilize you? I'm not saying they're not doing it, but what kind of things makes you the most comfortable on the court?
I like the ball in my hands. I'm sure if you asked a lot of players in the league, they would say that. But I like making decisions, setting people up, and I'm just comfortable with the ball. So I think, in that span where Jokic was out, guys got a feel for cutting off me, and then coming off screens too and being aggressive. I thought Gary got really good coming off screens. Not that he wasn't already, but he even played at a higher level.
So first of all, Jokic, what happened, Mason? What happened? He's as bad as Reggie Miller in terms of knowing his name, how to pronounce it, unless we're all wrong, but I don't think we are. It's Jokic. Jokic has to tell him. I think we should all, we need to refer to like Plumlee or something until he gets it right. No, I'm only kidding. I'm kidding, guys. But interesting stuff. You know, he talked about how he likes to have the ball in his hands. And I think that's very clear. That's one of the things that, you know, I think we saw from this last stretch is he's not playing off ball. He was like playing the Jokic role and doing a very, very good job of it, of running those DHOs. He had some really nice passes. He just touches the ball a lot. And I think that's the best way to utilize him. And so that's, I think it's going to be a very, very interesting thing to see how many minutes he gets and just what role he has in the offense, whether it's with the first unit, second unit, whatever it is he's doing. It's going to be an interesting question. And then it'll also be interesting to see if they try to play those two guys together, because obviously if he's playing with Jokic, he's not going to be touching the ball too much. So we'll see how much overlap there is over the next couple games. We got Nikola Jokic next. Not a lot to talk about with him. 3 games, 11 points, 8 rebounds, 3.3 assists. Worst defensive rating on the team. Again, 3-game sample size. We have to really take everything here with a grain of salt. But keeping an eye on him defensively, I think, is going to be the thing. I think his defense has been bad since he's gotten back from the injury, but as to be expected, some tenderness in that leg. Obviously, it's super sensitive. He barely got touched the other day, and he went to the floor. So I think defense is going to be the big question for Jokic, and you know, we all have to cut him some slack because he's coming back from this injury, but whether or not becomes a liability, that's going to be a big question and something to kind of keep an eye on. So Jokic back, excited that he's back, and in a lot of ways I really do feel like the next 10-game sample size, when I'm doing this the next time, it's all going to be about what things carried over, what are the positive things carried over from this 10-game stretch, like Murray playing well, Lyles playing well, Harris, Plumlee, and how does Jokic fit into that equation? I think that's going to be the biggest question probably over the next 10 games. Emmanuel Mudiay, 18 minutes per game, 7.7 points, 38% from three, impressive. I mean, the guy, I'm ready to declare Emmanuel Mudiay a good catch-and-shoot three-point shooter. I just think we've seen it for a while now, for a lot of last year too. The catch-and-shoot numbers were good. We're seeing it this year. His three-point shot, I think, he's a legitimate 35% to 40% three-point shooter. Like, he'll probably have stretches where he's 35, stretches where he's 40. So I think that's who he is. 36.8% field goals percent shooter. So he that's the worst, obviously, on the team. Wilson Chandler was second worst. So he's shooting a rare instance of a guy who's shooting better from three than he is from two, which is, you know, a big part of the game. If you listen to the show a lot, you know that I think his shot selection in that mid-range and at the rim is one of the defining traits of his game, unfortunately. But something – that's why I think it's a correctable error. I don't know if it's going to happen in Denver. I've kind of lost confidence that it's going to happen in Denver. But if he does turn it around either at his next stop or whatever, if, you know, maybe here in Denver, it's going to be a lot about his shot selection from inside the three-point arc. Minus 5.4 per game is the worst on the team. He has the worst offensive rating and second worst defensive rating. We've already talked about those things. Don't have to hammer him home. It's interesting to see, though, where he's going to fit. And this was like the main topic. Oh, actually, let me first say he's been a net negative in 8 of the 10 games. He was a plus 1 in one game. He was a plus 11 in the Orlando game, which is funny. I think if you look at the last 10 games, 9 of them were really bad. The Orlando game, he was the MVP. He had a phenomenal game, played 30 minutes, scored 18 points, and was a plus 11. So kind of, he was kind of the hero of that game, or one of the heroes of that game. But you look at the other game, all other games, and you know, not too great. So, so now the question becomes the rotation. I guess this is a good chance to kind of talk about how I see the rotation. You know, obviously, I think your starters, Murray Harris, there's no question about it. Torrey Craig, I think, fits the starting lineup really, really well. I like him at the three. And the Nuggets are looking to play some small ball. I think you go with Wilson at the four there and stick with what you have. I see some people talking about Trey Lyles. You know, Trey Lyles, I think, outperforming Wilson over these last couple games, especially offensively. But I think with Wilson there at the four playing alongside Jokic, you're going to get the best version of Wilson. And I actually think it's going to be you got defenders around the court. You got spacing and shooting around the court. I just think that's a really, really good starting lineup. By the way, now, who knows what happens between now and March, but let's just talk a theoretical here. Millsap's back and Torrey Craig earns himself a full-time contract with the Nuggets. Those are some big assumptions. But let's just say it happens by the last month of the season. How exciting is this starting lineup of Murray Harris, Torrey Craig, Paul Millsap, and Nikola Jokic? First of all, let's think about defensively. Murray, I think, is doing a pretty good job defensively considering where he's at, you know, in his career arc. Gary Harris, very good defender. Torrey Craig, elite defender. Millsap, elite defender. Jokic, good defender, especially when you surround him with that many good defenders. So now you have Torrey Craig, who's your lockdown perimeter player. He gets the other team's best perimeter player. You get Millsap, who's going to be like your big help side guy and also can lock down one-on-one a good power forward player. Gary Harris now gets the second best backcourt player, and I think he's a phenomenal defender anyway, and you stick him on the second best player, now he's good. I just think that lineup defensively is a juggernaut, has some juggernaut potential. And then you talk about shooting. Torrey Craig, we don't know his offense. Like, he has like a loose hand. There's some weird things to his offensive game, although it seems to be effective. But he's the fifth option on that group. He is definitely good enough to be a fifth option on a starting lineup. And so you got Murray and Harris shooting the ball well. I'm going to talk about Murray shooting here in a second. But those guys, elite three-point shooters. Craig projects to be at least an above-average three-point shooter at the three. Playmakers and scorers and Jokic and Millsap. I'm so high on that lineup. Now, I don't know if everybody's healthy. Does Craig get the nod over Wilson Chandler? I mean, that kind of creates some weird dynamics. But if it were me and I was no politics involved, no personalities and this and that, that might be the team's best five-man unit. And that's just – I think that's crazy to think. The other thing about it, Jamal Murray, the seventh pick in the draft. Gary Harris, 19th pick in the draft. Torrey Craig, undrafted. Millsap, the 47th pick, I believe, and then Jokic, the 41st pick. One lottery pick and then one undrafted guy, 2 second rounder. I mean, just what a crazy, that's such a underdog unit. So, but anyway, getting back to the rotation here, Murray, Harris, Craig, Wilson, Jokic starting. If it were me, it would be Barton, Beasley, who is like a sometimes player. He's probably... You probably just go with the three-guard rotation of Murray, Harris, Barton, and maybe Craig slides over. But we'll just say Beasley here now for the purposes here. Barton, Beasley, you've got Lyles, you've got Plumlee off of the bench. to me, that's your lineup. That's your nine-man rotation. And Moutier is cut out of that. But I just think that Barton can handle those backup point guard minutes certainly better than Emmanuel Moutier can. And that provides you, I think, with a lot of small ball opportunities. So your second unit, maybe Wilson plays the three, Lyles plays the four, maybe Gary Harris hops in there and Beasley plays some three. I just think that gives you a lot of interesting versatility. So where does Moutier fit in? That's going to be a big question. And it'll be interesting to see what Malone does with Moutier. I'm guessing it's probably early in the season for them to pull the plug on Moutier. I don't think that's what they want to do. But at the same time, I think it's become pretty evident that the team has some better options. So we'll see what they do. It'll be interesting. Jamal Murray, 16.6 points per game, 48% three-point shooting. That dude is on fire. And this is on 5.2 three-point field goal attempts a game. High volume, shooting 48%. This is the Jamal Murray we all believed in. This is the Jamal Murray we all knew was going to show up at some point. And over the last 10 games, it's actually been more than 10 games, but we're doing a 10-game show. So over 10 games, 48% on five shots game. Absolutely scorching hot. Terrific basketball, terrific shooting for him. And, you know, if this is what we get going forward, I'm not going to say 48%, but 40% three-point shooter on high volume. Gary Harris, 40% three-point shooter on high volume. The Nuggets have themselves a team. They've got themselves a squad. And I actually think this is what we have. I think we have two elite three-point shooters that can knock down open shots. Jamal Murray and Gary Harris, to a certain extent, can knock down contested shots right now and doing some interesting stuff with, you know, off of the dribble. It's just there's not too many teams that have two great three-point shooters like this on the same roster. And Gary Harris has been slumping a bit. Jokic has been out. Imagine what happens over the next 10 games if both of those guys start shooting well and Jokic gets back to form. Just give Jokic shooters like that. It's over. I'm telling you right now, it is over. Give him the shooters, and this is going to be a fun 10-game stretch if those guys can continue to hit. And then this is the cool thing. 10 games, 97% free throw shooting. He's actually has the fifth best overall free throw percentage in the NBA right now. It's like 94% overall. But last 10 games, 97%. He's just in his zone. He's in his zone right now, and I hope he keeps it up. And free throw shooting, by the way, people don't know this, one of the best indicators for three-point shooting. A lot of times you see guys in college and especially in the one-and-done era where it's like, oh, man, this guy shot 38% from three. Maybe he's a good three-point shooter, but the free throw line, he's shooting 60%. And that's a big red flag. On the flip side, a guy shooting, you know, 29% in 1 year in college and it looks bad, but you look at his free throw shooting and he's 93% and you think, man, but we know he has some good form. So Jamal Murray, even last year, this year, he's always been a great free throw shooter. And I think we all just knew at some point that the shot was going to start falling. Well, it looks like it's falling, guys, and it's fun to watch. Only 2.4 assists per game, which is really low for a point guard. Really, really low for a guy playing 30 minutes per game, which is what he's done over the last 10 games. So 2.4 assists is low. Thankfully, only 1.4 turnovers per game. And that's another huge, huge part for him is just not turning the ball over. And he's been good about that. 116.2 offensive rating is by far the best on the team. I think the next closest is like 113. I think it was Plumlee. So 116.2 offensive rating. When he's on the court, the Nuggets offense is humming. For 10 games straight, the offense is humming when he's on the court. Plus 5.3 is the best overall raw plus minus on the team. A lot of that is because obviously the big per 100 numbers, but also he's playing 30 minutes per game, so he's playing a lot of minutes, so his raw plus minus is going to be good. Not that this hadn't already happened before this last 10-game stretch, but he solidified himself as the team's point guard. And one of the things I think is interesting, I see a lot of people fake trade, and what if we get Kemba Walker or George Hill? I don't know if the Nuggets want to move on from a new point guard. I think they need a backup point guard. Whether it's this year or next year, I think they need a backup point guard. But I wonder if you bring in a Kemba Walker at this point. I mean, obviously, if the price is right, you do whatever. But do you really – like, Jamal Murray is playing so well, and I think maybe he's a below-average point guard right now just given his age and whatever, but how much longer is that going to be the case? And is it worth it to stunt the growth of him if you move him to the bench and you're playing somebody ahead of him 30 minutes per game? I think the answer to that is no. I think – 10, 15, 20 games ago, maybe the answer was yes because he didn't look ready. But you know what? He looks ready now, and I think that changes the equation. So I don't know if the Nuggets should be in the market for a starting PG, I do think they need to be in the market for a backup PG. But he solidified himself as the team's point guard, and I think it changes the way the front office approaches both free agency and the trade deadline. He can become a much better creator for other those. I talked about that with the low assist numbers. I think the number one thing I would say for Jamal right now, and maybe this is a non-issue, maybe I'm seeing things, but I'm seeing it and I see it a lot. He needs to get better at hitting the roll guy. He gets trapped a lot and he has to end up like resetting the offense through the safety valve, the release valve. Not the release valve. What I mean by that is if you're standing at the 3-point line and you're trapped, a guy comes running out to like half court for you to like reset the offense backwards, a pass backwards usually as a release. He has to do that a lot because when he gets trapped, he doesn't have like the ability to make the pass in between the two guys or around or be the strength with the ball. And he needs to get that skill because the Nuggets are leaving points on the board when they can't hit Plumlee and Jokic on the roll. So that's the one thing that I think you look at his game and one of the things I'm really keeping an eye on him going forward. So, but he's just been so phenomenal. Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Nikola Jokic, three absolute studs playing with just so much potential in it, and it's so fun to watch. And then you throw guys like Trey Lyles into the mix and Malik Beasley, and there's just a lot to be excited about, I think, over this last 10 games. And hopefully this next 10 games is fun. It's tougher. It's a really tough stretch of games, but the Nuggets have some things going. Long episode, guys, but it's fun to always recount and give a broad picture of what's going on with the Nuggets. I hope you enjoyed it. Check out the previous episodes if you haven't already, and I'm going to be back again next time.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.